Hello, you're tuned into CITR 101.9 FM. You're listening to Democracy Watch on CITR 101.9 FM, as I just mentioned. Sorry, we had some technical hiccup at the beginning of the show, so we're starting a few minutes late. We are the News Collective's alternative and undercovered program focused on local Vancouver and Lower Mainland current affairs. Today is National Day of Indigenous Peoples.
I'm Andy Laidman, and today we're broadcasting from UBC's Vancouver campus, as usual, on the ancestral, traditional, and unceded territories of the Haka Miam-speaking Musqueam peoples.
And I'm Alex DeBoer. Today on Democracy Watch, we're, of course, focusing on Indigenous stories, and we're lucky to have in studio our old News Collective comrade, Rema Tulashek, joining us to talk about some reporting he and his classmate, V. Wells, did on a Heiltsuk language revitalization project. This reporting was done as part of the UBC Journalism Program's Reporting in Indigenous Communities class. After that, we're going to turn to a fascinating interview that News Collective member Andy Laidman, who's reading headlines with me, did with Cree scholar and activist Harlan Pruden. Pruden discusses the nuances of what it means to be a two-spirited Indigenous person and how that identity is not as simple as being simply queer and Indigenous. But first, we have headlines from Vancouver and the Lower Mainland.
First superhero series for Indigenous girls launches today. The first Indigenous superhero series, Fierce Girls, created for Indigenous girls, launches today. The show, which is a transmedia project, aims to create, change, and empower young Indigenous women. Viewers will be able to watch it on YouTube, Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, and other social media platforms. Fierce Girl is a co-production of Tangwenu.com, an independent Maori news and information portal in Aotearoa. It is also funded by the Canadian Media Fund. You can find Fierce Girls at fiercegirls.tv.
Indigenous consent needed for resource development. A Resource for Future Generations conference in Vancouver recommends taking a step beyond the existing standards of First Nations consultations when it comes to resource development in Canada. Lawyer Cynthia Callison says First Nations should be consulted and accommodated when they have Aboriginal title in an area under development. She argues this will result in better decisions that balance the distribution of benefits from development. That would mean Indigenous communities wouldn't have to go through courts to prove title and could do planning to maintain environmental protection, cultural and economic development.
Federal government promises to consult with Heiltsuk people on coastal development. The federal government is to seek discussions with First Nations before any project approvals on BC's North Coast, a statement expressed by Prime Minister Trudeau in Prince Rupert on Thursday. The Government of Canada and the Heiltsuk peoples have formally agreed to tackle conservation of oceans, development of marine project areas, increasing emergency preparedness, and boosting First Nations response capacity as part of the federal government's $1.5 billion Oceans Protection Plan. However, Trudeau has been condemned by some First Nations for the expansion of the Trans Mountain Pipeline. The federal government is moving forward with the intention to purchase the existing pipeline from Kinder Morgan and proceed with its construction. This project will have a tremendous impact on the coast.
And City Council in Vancouver approves Affordable Housing Endowment Fund. Today, Vancouver City Council approved the creation of a $2 billion Vancouver Housing Endowment Fund. This fund is mandated to preserve and grow affordable housing in the city and will include city-owned and city-operated land. The fund will be used to build a target of 27,000 new homes over the next 10 years. That breaks down to 7,200 new homes every year. The fund will also aim to provide 12,000 social supportive and cooperative housing units for lower and middle class households. The Affordable Housing Endowment Fund is part of a newly approved financial strategy, which is meant to help council achieve its Housing Vancouver targets. Housing Vancouver is the City of Vancouver's 10-year housing strategy. This was passed about 6 months ago. This strategy also has a major focus on encouraging additional rental developments to be built and on using the city's new authority provided by the provincial government to zone 4 rental-only areas.
The City of Vancouver recently changed the name of 2 plazas in the city, and we've just pulled a video up here from the City of Vancouver that will explain how to pronounce these new names.
The name in Hun Kaminum is Shtlanak. Huitlanak?
The name is Huitlanak. Huitlanak.
Huitlanak in Hunkaminam, it means a place to have gatherings, to have ceremony.
Huitlanak is a Squamish word that we've created for this square in the city of Vancouver. The meaning of the name is related to a place of cultural gathering.
Chumathquim, Tsleil-Waututh, and Squamish are part of the Coast Salish peoples, and our ceremonies and our gatherings were the places where many things were exchanged. Information about people's names and weddings would happen, but also things that took place in ceremony became our laws as well and became our truth.
The reason to, I think, to learn all this word is to recognize that there is another language besides English and French that is here in the city of Vancouver. And it also gives recognition that people that live in different parts of the world will also endeavor to learn the language of the land.
In Canada, there are over 60 Indigenous languages, 50% of which are in British Columbia, and two of which are in the city of Vancouver. The renaming of the Vancouver Art Gallery Plaza to Huitlanak Square is an example of the work that our three nations are doing with the city of Vancouver to give visibility to the cultures of the Musqueam, Squamish, and Tsleil-Waututh people. When Vancouver was founded, a lot of the history of the Squamish, Musqueam, and Tsleil-Waututh people was not considered in the development of Vancouver. That this territory is our territory, and we have no treaty with the Crown or with Canada. And so the land still belongs to our people.
Naming of this plaza and many other things within the city in the Hunkaminam language is a real commitment towards recognizing the indigenous peoples of this land that still live here and were here before the creation of the city of Vancouver. And it really truly speaks of reconciliation in the sense that we're working together.
I think the city of Vancouver would be a far more interesting place if the two indigenous languages of the city were thriving and would make the city a far more unique place.
And those plaza names are for the Queen Elizabeth Theater as well as the Art Gallery Plaza there in downtown Vancouver.
Cool, yeah. I think, did the city make that video?
That did, yeah. That was made by the city of Vancouver there.
Great, cool. Also, just another headline or shout out to National Indigenous Day at Trout Lake. If you're looking for something to do right now and you want to learn about local Indigenous nations, there's lots of events happening there. So head down to Trout Lake, which is near Commercial and 12th. Great. So those were your headlines from Vancouver and the Lower Mainland. You're listening to Democracy Watch on CITR 101.9 FM. We are the News Collective, and we have a special guest with us today. That is, this person is our old friend, Rema Tulashek, who has been very involved in the News Collective during the school year and was away doing an internship at CBC. So we're very lucky to have him back with us. On National Indigenous Peoples Day, CITR's News Collective and the whole station, as you know, recognize and celebrate the many cultures and languages rooted in First Nations heritage that give Canada its unique identity. To explore the story of one of these languages, we have with us Rema Tula. Rema Tula, it's good to have you back.
Well, thank you so much for the warm welcome. Alex, always good to be back home.
I'm glad that this is home. So let's look at what you have for us today. This story is one that you reported on as part of the Reporting in Indigenous Communities course at the UBC School of Journalism. The story was published as part of the More Than Words series and also went live on CBC Indigenous, so feel free to check out the original story there. So can you tell us a bit about the story that you worked on here?
Yeah, absolutely. So it was a group project, and I and my co-author and colleague at the School of Journalism, V. Wells, worked on this story extensively. And in a nutshell, the story is about Elizabeth Wilson, a student at UBC's NITEP teaching program. She set out on a journey to launch Vancouver's first urban Helsuk language classes. But her journey was not all that easy. And you know what? I think we should allow her to introduce herself in her own language.
Hi, I'm Emma Ng, and welcome to CITR 101.9 FM at the UBC Point Grey campus, located on...
I
think it's a slight technical misfire.
That was a slight technical misfire. Let me get up the correct clip.
Hello, everyone. Good morning. I'm thankful you're all here. Eichtsimga is my name. Well, Eichtsimga is my traditional name. My Ramshuagala Klanuba, Liz, Elizabeth. So that's where my name is. Eichtsimga Klanuba. My name is Eichtsimga.
Well, you just heard from Elizabeth Wilson, and she is the main character of a story. She's a soft-spoken but resilient 39-year-old mother of four children.
And can you tell us a little bit about the First Nation community she belongs to and their place in Vancouver's Lower Mainland?
Right. So the Helsik Nation is in the community of Bella Bella. It's a beautiful place. It's about an hour and a half by plane from Vancouver. Elizabeth is from Bella Bella, and she came to Vancouver as a student. She believes there are anywhere between 50 to 80 people from her community right here in the city. And a census conducted in 2016 suggests that there are less than 15 people from the Helsuk community who can speak their language.
That's interesting. Not very many. And before she arrived in Vancouver, where did her story begin in being proficient in the Helsuk language?
Yeah, so it actually begins in the Bella Bella Community School long before she arrived in Vancouver. She discovered her language sometime in 2001. She was working as a substitute teacher at the school. She heard Helsuk being spoken within the classrooms amongst students and teachers, and soon enough, she started falling in love with it. We asked Elizabeth to explain this process of falling in love with the language. Take a listen.
It just came natural. It was just something that I felt deep in my heart and instantly came out. And yeah, it just, everything else seemed to happen one step at a time. And it gradually came together. Well, not gradually, but quickly came together. Next thing you know, I'm sitting in the classroom learning along with the students. And then... being asked to substitute in the language classrooms to becoming a full-time staff member of the language department. I believe I was only in that department for 2 months, and then one of the other language teachers had to leave the program like on the spot. So essentially they said, okay, well, you're taking that position and you're going to teach grades 5 to 7 for the remainder of the year. So I'm like, okay, I've been teaching since.
So Elizabeth brings this passion for the language to Vancouver, but is there a moment in Vancouver that turns this passion into a conviction to share the knowledge?
Yeah, so V and I, we both were looking for that moment, and we were wondering, what is there something, one pivotal moment that changed everything for her in Vancouver? And you know what, Alex, there actually is one such moment, and it takes place at her home in Vancouver. It's a beautiful moment. It's best heard from Elizabeth.
Laying in my son's bed with him, putting him to sleep, just talking with him, and we were counting in the language, and we were going over, I believe, the weather in our language, and body parts, and I think we ended up singing the head, shoulders, knees, and toes song in our language, and
I think that's when it really hit me, because he said, well, I wonder how many kids that live in the city even know our language. And I knew the answer was very little, like slim to none kind of thing. And I left him to sleep, and I went into my living room and sat down. I was like, wow, that kind of really hit me. And I'm like, okay, well, I'm here and I'm able to teach my children what I've learned at home. Why not teach people that are wanting to learn it that are living here in the city?
Well, that's really nice. So her son made her think about other people in the city, but is there a strong enough demand from the urban Hadza community to learn their language?
Yeah, that's a valid question. For something of this sort to be sustainable, you need to have a consistent demand and people really eager to learn that language. So Elizabeth told me that she went on to Facebook to see if there's an urban Hadza page. And while she's doing this, word gets around of her arrival to Vancouver. Let's listen to her.
I saw someone post on the Facebook page called Urban Hadzik, and I've also gotten like private messages saying, "Oh, I see you moved to the city. Are you going to be taking or teaching any classes, or are you willing to?" kind of thing. So it took me a bit, because moving to a city with my family was new, and I wanted that process to be able to be fully settled before I had really jumped the gun and said, okay, yeah, class is starting here on this date, this time kind of thing. And because if I knew the first apartment we were in was going to be our apartment for as long as we needed it to be, I would have started extremely, like, right away. But because I knew we were going to have to eventually move out of there, I kind of wanted to wait for that time to come and go, to start the process. And then, yeah, there's a few people who were becoming and are becoming extremely impatient with it, and I understand. Like, I wanted it to start quite a while ago as well, but like I said, it's been a process. So I wanted it to start off without any glitches, any stress kind of thing. But yeah, it sounds like we may have secured a spot.
So Elizabeth refers to people who are eager to take these Hadzik language classes. Can you give a sense of who these future students are?
Yeah, so we did go around looking for these students. Both V and I had the opportunity to interview one of them. Her name is Wanda Christensen. She is a 64-year-old survivor of the residential school system. She had been in touch with Elizabeth from the beginning and was extremely eager for the classes to start. And to really understand the significance of this Hadzik language class and what it really means to the community, I want to share something with you that Wanda said to us during the interview.
At a residential school, I was only a number. This will give me an identity. Cleansing my heart, my mind, and my soul due to the soul loss. My life's healing journey has brought me to this stage in learning. I would like to learn the language to gain my right back that was denied me with my culture, which I believe language is a part of. Language is learning about Hadzik custom values and ways of being, and will culturally and spiritually strengthen families and communities, individuals. I also would like to learn language so that I can or may become an instructor to others who wish to learn. I believe that when I am a fluent speaker, I will have an understanding of my participation in traditional activities, such as ceremonies, such as potlatches, tombstone feasts and settlement feasts. Like I will be just sitting there as a witness and community member in the audience. I will be able to participate.
Well, that's very heartfelt and touching. So while there are people for whom these classes hold so much significance, such as Liz Wilson here, and then there's those people who are willing to provide classes, what's really stopping this Helsic language class from happening?
Yeah, well, there were many setbacks that Elizabeth had to endure. Consider that the first class was proposed for sometime in October last year. And when we were speaking to Elizabeth during the time of reporting this story, this was March this year. So when we met her in March, she still wasn't sure when the first class would take place. We asked her what the main challenges were, and this is what she had to say.
Finding the proper space where everybody can go comfortably, making sure that space has everything that the class will need to, essentially for me to be able to teach, and for the students to have access to other means as well, and the cost of the room as well is. Well, that's a major issue, is finding funds to cover the cost of using a room. It's kind of different because in Bella Bella you can go to the health center or the elders building or the college or even the community school and say, well, I would like to have a weekend class or an evening class, and they would want. Of course, they would support it, and they'd be like, "Yeah, for sure," and wouldn't cost anything.
Yeah.
So it's definitely different, because that was the one thing that I quickly came to me when I'm like, "Okay, I'm gonna teach a class here in the city," and I'm like, "Okay, where am I gonna hold this class, and what is it gonna cost me?" kind of thing.
Okay, so it's unclear where the class will be held and when. When you guys were reporting on the story, can you tell us what was going on?
Yes, so since this was a story V and I were following closely, we were waiting with bated breath, along with Elizabeth, hoping for a breakthrough, for a miracle from somewhere. We were constantly in touch with her to see if there was any progress on that front. And then, one evening, I get a text from Elizabeth. We finally had a breakthrough. The Huihua Library at UBC, which is right next to the Longhouse, stepped in to help Elizabeth. They offered one of the rooms in the library for the first class. On that day, 13 members from urban Helsuk community turned up, and one quickly got a sense that the room wasn't really large enough to accommodate them. So they would have to look for a bigger space for future classes. But for now, everything was falling into place for Elizabeth, for the students, for everyone. So Vancouver's first independent urban Helsuk language learning class was underway on March 31st, 2018. And what a moment that was.
That sounds great. Not only did she find a space, it wasn't even big enough to hold all the students initially.
And that's a good problem to have.
That is a very good problem to have. So why don't you take us there?
All right, then. So here are some sounds of Vancouver's urban Helsuk community gathered together to learn the language. It was led by Elizabeth Wilson. Now, you'll notice, Alex, that this isn't a traditional language class, but in a way, a platform for the community members to reconnect with each other and share lighter moments.
Clinta.
Clinta.
Yadin.
Yadin.
Nusi.
Nusi.
Tzinikla.
Sanikla.
Salsa.
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 Tisla. Then Evelyn thought that too. And then Phyllis was like, nope. So we'll go your way, because there's more than
more than one occasion it's been said the way he said it. I was like, yes. Can you say it again?
It's just simple. Tisla.
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 Well, those were the sounds from the first Urban Helsuk class. And before I sign off, some bonus material for our listeners. If you're wondering what the head, shoulder, knees and toes song, the bedtime song that Elizabeth sang to her son that you just listened to, if you're wondering what that sounds like in the Helsuk language, then here it is.
Hechti ukwina uchta ma gugwi Pachs bispiu sims du chumach.
All right, so that was Rema Tulashek, along with a story that was reported also by V. Wells, another UBC Journalism School student. And the story was about Vancouver's first Urban Helsuk language learning class. It was first reported for the CBC, so if you want to hear more about that story, check it out on CBC Indigenous. We are now going to take a short break, and then we're going to hear more original reporting on CITR's Democracy Watch. So stay tuned. It is National Day of Indigenous Peoples, and we have more original content coming up, including an interview done by News Collective member Andy Laidman with a Cree activist and scholar about being Indigenous and two-spirited, so stay tuned.
You know what's better than reading a great magazine? Reading a great magazine that also helps you fight poverty. Megaphone Magazine is sold by homeless and low-income vendors on the streets of Vancouver and Victoria. Vendors buy magazines for 75 cents and sell them for $2. It's flexible, low-barrier work for people who may not have access to traditional jobs. Download the Megaphone app to find vendors and buy the magazine, even when you don't have change.